On the morning of Bernie Pride's death, or it may have been the morning after, since Bernie died at his own convenience, nor did he think the estimated time of his departure worth recording, Cordelia was caught in a breakdown of the Bakerloo line outside Lambeth North, and was half an hour late at the office. She came up from Oxford Circus Underground into the bright June sunshine, sped past the early morning shoppers scanning the windows of Dickens and Jones, and plunged into the cacophony of Kingly Street, threading her way between the blocked pavement and the shining mass of cars and vans which packed the narrow street. The hurry, she knew, was irrational, a symptom of her obsession with order and punctuality. There were no appointments booked, no clients to be interviewed, no case outstanding, not even a final report to be written. She and Miss Sparshot, the temporary typist, at Cordelia's suggestion, were circulating information about the agency to all the London solicitors in the hope of attracting custom. Miss Sparshot would probably be busy with it now, eyes straying to her watch, tapping out her staccato irritation at every minute of Cordelia's lateness. She was an unprepossessing woman, with lips permanently taut, as if to prevent the protruding teeth from springing from her mouth, a receding chin with one coarse hair, which grew as quickly as it was plucked, and fair hair set in stiff corrugated waves. That chin and mouth seemed to Cordelia the living refutation that all men are born equal, and she tried from time to time to like and sympathise with Miss Sparshot, with a life lived in bed-sitting rooms, measured in the five-penny pieces fed to the gas stove, and circumscribed by fell seams and hand hemming. For Miss Sparshot was a skilled dressmaker, an assiduous attender at the GLC evening classes. Her clothes were beautifully made, but so dateless that they were never actually in fashion. Straight skirts in grey or black, which were exercises in how to sew a pleat or insert a zip fastener. Blouses with mannish collars and cuffs in insipid pastel shades, on which she distributed without discretion her collection of costume jewellery. Intricately cut dresses with hems at the precise length to emphasise her shapeless legs and thick ankles. Cordelia had no premonition of tragedy as she pushed open the street door, which was kept permanently on the latch for the convenience of the secretive and mysterious tenants and their equally mysterious visitors. The new bronze plaque to the left of the door gleamed brightly in the sun, in incongruous contrast to the faded and dirt-encrusted paint. Cordelia gave it a short glance of approval. Pride's Detective Agency. Proprietors, Bernard G. Pride, Cordelia Gray. It had taken Cordelia some weeks of patient and tactful persuasion to convince Bernie that it would be inappropriate to append the words ex-Criminal Investigation Department Metropolitan Police to his name, or prefix Miss to hers. There had been no other problem over the plaque, since Cordelia had brought no qualifications or relevant past experience to the partnership, and indeed no capital, except her slight but tough 22-year-old body, a considerable intelligence which Bernie, she suspected, had occasionally found more disconcerting than admirable, and a half-exasperated, half-pitying affection for Bernie himself. It was obvious very early to Cordelia that in some undramatic but positive way life had turned against him. She recognised the signs. Bernie never got the enviable front left-hand seat in the bus. He couldn't admire the view from a train window without another train promptly obscuring it. The bread he dropped invariably fell buttered side downwards. The Mini, reliable enough when she drove it, stalled for Bernie at the busiest and most inconvenient intersections. She sometimes wondered whether, in accepting his offer of a partnership in a fit of depression or of perverse masochism, she was voluntarily embracing his ill luck. She certainly never saw herself as powerful enough to change it.